little better? Is it actually a little better? There we go. See, this is what happens when you're a dad now. You try cool, like, cheesy things, and they just don't really work out like that. And so, you know. Our message today, though, is pick your towel up, all right? That's our message for the title of our message today, which honestly was kind of the main command that Bree gave me early on in our marriage when you just, you know, get out of the shower and you just leave your towel, you know, everywhere and stuff like that. And so some of you guys might need that command a little bit more today in general. But again, that's me being a dad. And anyway, so you know what I love about being a dad these days is telling stories of my daughter, okay? And so that's like my favorite thing. Can I show you some of the stories we've told? You can, I have the clicker now. But these are some of the stories we've told together. We've actually started using ChatGPT to come up with some stories at night, you know, together. And so we come up with some epic stories together. And it's one of my favorite things, you know? You know what's interesting, though, is every time we tell a story, it has to have a bad guy in it. She's really not interested in the story unless there's a bad guy in it or unless there's a problem, you know? And so, no, Dad, we need a monster, you know, that she can take down or, you know, that turns nice or something like that. But I think it kind of tells us, you know, something interesting about who we are as human beings, that there's something about us that we're kind of drawn to those stories of good versus evil and light versus darkness, you know? And I think we're drawn to it because we live it, you know, every single day. We see darkness, you know, that's going on in the world every single day. I mean, the last couple of weeks alone, you know, I've had friends who've lost their jobs or friends that have had strokes. Or of course, you know, friends and brothers of ours that have been killed. Or on Easter Sunday, you know, I know there was even a news story in Nigeria, you know, people being slaughtered, you know, for their faith. And war is raging, you know, around the world. We see the darkness every single day. And the question that we're trying to ask of ourselves is this one: how do we overcome the darkness? How do we overcome the darkness? You know, that light versus darkness theme runs all the way through the book of John. John, from the first, you know, sentence of his gospel, talks about light has come into the world and darkness will not be able to overcome it or understand it. And then last week, of course, we celebrated Easter, which was that moment of light overcoming darkness and death itself being defeated. But before the resurrection, you know, the disciples didn't know the end of the story. They were living in the middle of it. They were terrified. They were confused. They were watching the darkness start to close in on them. And so what does Jesus do when the darkness starts to close in? That's what John 13 is all about, which is where we are going to be today. Like I said, the title of the message is Pick Up Your Towel. So I'll leave that right here, you know, just as kind of our image for today. But let's dive into John chapter 13. Here we go. It says, it was just before the Passover festival. What do we know about Passover? It's that moment, right, where darkness and death starts coming over the Israelites and the Egyptians. It's kind of this dark moment, you know, for them back then. It says, Jesus knew that the hour had come for him to leave this world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. The hour has come for Jesus to die. What I love about this, and you'll see it a few times in the next few verses, it says that Jesus knew. Jesus knew. Jesus knew. And I think John is setting us up to say Jesus was not a victim here. He wasn't like, oh, I didn't know this was going to happen. This is crazy. I'm not sure I'm ready for this. Jesus knew. He was there. He was in control. He knew that he's about to be betrayed. He knew that he was about to be denied. He knew. He sees torture in his future. He sees a cross coming, all of it. And he doesn't run, because he's the good shepherd, not the hired hand. The darkness is coming, but Jesus is the one here that's in control. It keeps going. It says the evening meal was in progress, and the devil had already prompted Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot, to betray Jesus. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, that he had come from God and was returning to God. It's Passover. The hour has come. The darkness is starting to come in. The devil, the main bad guy, is already starting to make some moves. The evening meal is here. It's like that movie where we see all the bad guys that are starting to kind of form together as a mob and get their weapons ready to go, and they're about to go, create some damage. And what does Jesus know in this moment? Jesus knows, though, who has the power. It says that he knows where he's from. He knows where he's going. He knows that all authority has been given to him. And the picture I get right here of Jesus, it's kind of like he's putting that eye black, under his eyes, where he's kind of getting ready to go confront the darkness. The theme music in the movie is starting to play. He's doing push-ups or whatever, getting ready for the bad guys to come in and start to throw down, on the darkness. And we're about to see, it's like, man, what is Jesus about to do? What is the most powerful being in creation going to do to take down the darkness? What big gun is he going to use? What army is he going to assemble to do this? What move is he going to make? And then it says, so he got up. We're like, oh, snap, here it comes. He got up. What does he grab? It says he took off his outer clothing and wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with a towel that was wrapped around him. Wait a second. That's not what the powerful guy is supposed to do. We've seen the movies. The good guy comes in and beats the bad guy with something powerful. He's got like a better army or a better, a stronger punch. But instead, Jesus takes his robe off, wraps a towel around his waist, and gets on his knees. Now for us, I think that image or that moment may have lost some of its potency, because we are used to things like socks and, shoes and foot creams and baths and pavement and all that kind of good stuff. Of course, back then they didn't have any of those things. So you step out, you're stepping in, the dirt, you're stepping in waste, you're stepping in the trash. Your feet got gnarly and nasty. And so, of course, when you're coming into an evening meal at Passover, before you throw them nasty things up on the cushion, you got to make sure that you wash your feet. But that was usually for the servant, of the house, or that was for the one that had kind of the least honor, in the house. That was definitely not meant for the guest of honor, for the main, kind of honorable person in the house. But that's Jesus. He's on his knees right here. Why did Jesus do this? I don't think this was Jesus just as a leader saying, I need to show people? I need to show people that I like to serve people too. As if it was just something that he did to kind of be a cool, kind of leadership move. I think this is who Jesus is, not just kind of what he does. Jesus comes wrapped in a towel. He doesn't just bring, the towel just to show a cool example. Jesus, this is his very nature. What do we know? It says the Son of Man didn't come to be served, but to serve, to give his life away. Philippians 2 says that he made himself nothing, taking the very nature of a servant. Jesus is king, yet he's also the one with the towel. With all of his power and authority, we expected a flashy showdown with the devil, a blast, of divine power at Judas or something like that. Instead, he washes their feet, even Judas's. When I say God is your servant, how does that feel for you? Even as I say that, it feels like heretical to say it. God is your servant. God is your servant. And then, honestly, it feels like, I shouldn't say that. No, God, we are your servants. Like, it feels a little uncomfortable to kind of put God in that place. And that's exactly what Peter, kind of feels in this moment. He came to Simon Peter and said to him, Lord, are you going to wash my feet? Jesus replied, you don't realize now what I'm doing, but later you will understand. So many of life's most important moments, we don't understand in the moment. But take time, once we see what God does with those moments, then we start to realize and understand. But Peter's like, no, you shall never wash my feet. And how does Jesus answer that? He says, well, Peter, unless I wash you, you have no part with me. Oh, then Peter is like, well, then not just my feet, but my hands and my head as well. Jesus answered, those who've had a bath need only to wash their feet. Their whole body is made clean, and you are clean, though not every one of you. For he, what? Knew. He knew who is going to betray him. And that was why he said, not every one of you is clean. That is a powerful, kind of intense statement from Jesus. Unless I wash you, you have no part with me. You have no share with me, no inheritance with me. And I love Peter because Peter, man, I love him because he's just all in. He's like, okay, that wasn't the right answer, but like, then wash everything, you know? And I kind of love that about Peter because he's just trying to be all in best he can. He's trying to figure it out, but he's just trying to come to Jesus and he's kind of giving to me an appropriate response. It's like, Jesus, no, I do this for you. But Jesus is like, nope. Because I think we're expecting Jesus here to say, unless you serve me, you have no part with me. Unless you serve me, you have no part with me. But Jesus doesn't say that. He says, unless I serve you, you have no part with me. Unless you let me wash your feet, you cannot be with me. I think that's so powerful. And I also think that's genuinely hard for so many of us, letting Jesus serve us. At least it is for me. If someone came to me and said, hey, Nick, I want to come like clean your house. For some reason, that would feel uncomfortable for me, where I'm like, there's something vulnerable about it of like, I don't know if it's giving up control or not wanting to see, you know, what I have, or just being like, I don't need any help or something like that. It's a little uncomfortable for me. I know for some of you, you got no problem with that, okay? I was telling that to Bree, and she's like, oh, you want to clean my house? Come here, I'll show you where all the mops and, you know, and the brooms and stuff are. I'm heading out, you know, see you later. And so the second half of John 13 might be more for you, you know, but at least for me in this moment, I feel like it's just challenging for me to be served by others and to let Jesus wash my feet. You can imagine Jesus just kind of like being there and kind of like rubbing your feet and, you know, like getting in between your toes and stuff. You're just like, I don't know, man. Some of you are like, that sounds fantastic, you know, but like, again, for me, I think for some of us, I think it can feel a little bit uncomfortable. You know, I think one of our biggest challenges in having a close relationship with God is letting ourselves receive his love. Letting ourselves receive his love. For some reason, we think there's something spiritual about saying, we're sinners, we're wretches, God doesn't want, we don't even deserve him, he doesn't even want anything to do with us. We think there's something like spiritual about saying that, like we're humble saying that. And I think there's, you know, of course some truth in that, but God's disposition towards us is not distance. It's not like, man, you guys are so dirty, you're lucky I put up with you. God's disposition towards us is like, just radical generosity. He wants to get down and dirty for you. He wants to love you in those ways. He craves it. That's like his mission. That's the thing that it can excite him the most, is being there for us, is helping us out, is being there kind of in our time of need. You know, the question for us is, man, how does it shape us knowing that there's a God, the Almighty God, who desires, the relationship he desires with us is not merely asking us to serve him, but it's himself, clothed with a towel, kneeling at our feet, ready to serve us. How does that change the way that we live? How does that change the way that we view ourselves? How does it change the way that we view others, the way that we view God? He wants to do that for us. The question I have for you guys is, where do you feel like you need washing these days? Because even Jesus says, you know, there's times you could take a whole bath, you know, but then you walk to your friend's house, your feet still get dirty. And so you might not need a whole bath, but every day you kind of need that cleaning, you know. It says that the feet oftentimes are the thing that interacts with the world, you know, the most. And so we need kind of the daily cleaning of our feet just to kind of keep getting through the world. Where do you feel like you need washing today? Because all of us need washing in some ways. What ways do you feel a little bit dirty or a little bit dusty, you know, these days? And what are some of your biggest obstacles in letting Jesus do that for you? Is it shame? Man, my mess is way too big. I can't come before Jesus with that. Is it pride that you don't think you need help? Is it busyness that you are too frantic just to sit still long enough to let Jesus wash your feet? Or is it that deep down you're just not really sure? You don't really believe that Jesus loves you like that. You know, Jesus always approaches us with a towel. The only question is whether we're going to let him wash us with that towel. And if you're new to Jesus, there is no mess that Jesus can't clean. It doesn't matter how nasty and stanky you think your feet are. Jesus wants to help you. He can help you. The bigger the mess, I think the more excited. He's kind of like a clean freak in that way, you know? The more the mess, the more he gets excited, you know, to kind of get to work. He wants to get dirty for you. Let's keep going, though. It says, when he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and returned to his place. You understand what I've done for you? He asked them. You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. Very truly, I tell you, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them. Now, throughout the Gospel of John, man, we've watched Jesus do some extraordinary things. We've watched him turn water into wine, walk on water, raise Lazarus from the dead. I mean, there's been so much to admire about Jesus. But right here, Jesus stops and essentially says, admiration isn't what I'm looking for, isn't enough. He calls them from a place of adoration to imitation. I have set you an example, a pattern. Now imitate me. And he says, if you imitate me, you will be blessed if you imitate me. Because that's what blessing comes when you live life like Jesus. Jesus, you know, I don't really know too many places he does this. In this passage, he kind of pulls the I am your Lord card. There's not too many places around the Bible where he's like, yeah, I'm your Lord. I mean, he doesn't even say that here. He says, you guys call me your Lord, and that is what I am, you know. But he's like, if I'm your Lord and I'm willing to do this to get dirty for you, then you have no excuse not to do that for one another. I am your Lord. Jesus starts to get some of his most intense language comes in this chapter because he's so obsessed with searing this into our brain of who he is as a servant and what he wants us to look like. But right here it comes, I've set you an example. Imitate me. Think about, you know, we had Easter last Sunday, millions of people in churches around the world clapping, singing, praising God, celebrating. You're amazing, Jesus. And I wonder if on Monday morning, Jesus says, thank you for clapping. Now pick up your towel. Thank you for clapping. Now pick up your towel and imitate me. Imitate me. Don't just clap for me. Imitate me. Don't just clap for me. Imitate me. And the way that we imitate Jesus the most, when you're like Jesus the most, it's when you're serving people. It's when you're in the middle of the dirty, you know, serving people. You know, a story that came to mind for me that has stayed in my mind for 15 years, I think, since I heard this story is one from, you know, our brother Kit Cummings. A lot of you guys know Kit. You know, he shared this message, and I just remember this particular story. You know, Kit works in a lot of prisons and gangs and with young men and trying to bring the light of Jesus and the power of peace through some of the country's darkest places. And he had this story. You know, this is a picture of him baptizing an inmate named Andre. Now, Andre was a former gang leader. And he became a Christian while living in prison through some of the, you know, different kind of faith-based and character programs that they had in the prison. Now, where they lived in the prison, because of some of those programs, was a little bit different than where the rest of the inmates lived. They lived in a dorm that, because it was a lot of the guys trying to get their life right, it was considered maybe like the safest dorm. It was the one that had the air conditioning. It's, you know, it's the one where guys are trying to get their life right. So you hear safest, you hear cleanest, you hear most comfortable. How do you think the rest of the prison looked at that group of guys? So the rest of the guys in the prison, they hated those guys, you know, that lived there. So one day Andre goes up to the authorities in the prison after he had become a Christian and says, I want to transfer. I want to transfer back into the compound because I can't be a light if I'm not in the places that are most dark. And so he said, send me to the C block. And the C block is right in the middle, you know, of the compound. And he said, send me to the middle where it's 110 degrees in the summertime. Send me to the middle, you know, where the gang leaders, you know, still run the show. And they said, all right, so be it. And so he goes into the C block, and here's his first move. He doesn't preach. He doesn't say, hey, gather around, I want to tell you guys about Jesus. He gets up early, and he grabs a scrub brush, and he goes into the middle of the dorm in front of everyone and starts scrubbing down the dorm, cleaning the dorm, early in the morning, early in the morning. Some of the guys looked at him and start coming up to him and says, Dre, what are you doing, man? Have you gotten soft? Because Dre was a gang leader, but had given that up as he's starting to follow Jesus. But he felt like he's on a mission from God. And he's trying to be an example. He says, man, if we don't take pride in where we live, how are we going to take pride in our own lives and changing our own lives? And so he's there, and he's there scrubbing the, every morning, getting up, scrubbing. 7, 10 days, you know, goes by. One morning, 4 young gang members, you know, come up to Dre and say, hey, Brother Dre, why don't you sleep in this morning? We got it. We'll take care of it. And that act, you know, of service led to him leading prayer meetings, you know, in the whole compound, you know, for the different prisoners that were in there at the time. And you see, service, to me, is one of the main ways that we battle darkness. He went into the middle of darkness, in the middle of the compound, in a place where you're supposed to kind of blend in. You don't want to stand out in that kind of place. But he goes in and he does this in front of everybody. And why did he do it? Because he follows Jesus. A Jesus who on the night he was about to be betrayed and killed, that Jesus got on his knees and served and looked at his followers and says, imitate me. Imitate me. This is how you deal with the darkness in this world. This is how you battle it. You lay down your life. You don't try to grab for power. You pick up your towel and you serve and you go to work loving people as you love yourself. Even if you're betrayed, even if you're handed over to darkness, this is what we do, because love beats darkness every time. Service beats darkness every time. Jesus said, you want to know who's the greatest? It's the one who serves. It's the one who puts servant clothes on, who says, I'm just here as a slave of everybody else. He says, that person is the greatest. And so let me ask you something. Does that word servant, does that describe you? If people were to describe you, is that one of the words they would use to describe you? I know I'm at my best when I'm trying to approach life, or I'm going in any room that I'm in, and I just have the mindset of, I'm just a servant. I'm just a servant. Because every day I kind of have little moments where I'm like, oh, man, I complain, or I'm like, I'm a little bit better than this. I could do something else, or I have other, better things to do. But at the end of the day, if I just walk in and say, you know what, I think Jesus would have this mindset of, I'm just a servant. It helps me so much. I think about so many of you when I think about that. I think about a picture came up recently, I think that Jack Frederick put up, of Harold Carman, you know, who is rolling around on the ground at the ladies' Bible study with some of the kids in there, you know, because they needed some help. They needed someone to watch the kids. So Harold Carman, you know, is rolling around on the ground, you know, trying to hang out and play with these kids. I think about Jim Long. I ran into a Costco the other day. As I'm getting a bunch of things for myself, you know, Jim has his cart full of food that he's about to go bring to those that are unhoused. You know, I think about our hospitality team here, our AV, you know, team here that serve without anybody even noticing or recognizing them. There are so many of you who are serving when no one else is watching. And I think Jesus would be doing the same things. But does that describe you? Or do you think you're too better? You're better than all of those kinds of menial tasks. For some reason, Jesus didn't think that he was. You notice too how Jesus doesn't say this. He doesn't say, since I washed your feet, now it's your turn to wash mine. He says, since I washed your feet, now you go do this to each other. You know, as a dad and as one of the, you know, the youth and family minister here, when I ask parents, how do you feel most loved? You know what they say pretty much every time? Is when you love my kids, that's how I feel most loved. And I think Jesus is saying the same thing here. He's like, you want to love me? Love my kids. You want to love me? You want to serve me? You want to be Peter that's, you know, like, I want to serve you. He's like, okay, feed my lambs, which we see in John 21 is how he responds, you know, to Peter a little bit later. Love his people. That's how you love him. You know, I'm going to skip the next few verses as Jesus identifies his betrayer and Judas and hands him a piece of bread. Jesus takes it out and walks. And then John writes these words kind of at the end of that. He says, and it was night. When John says it was night, it should bring to mind what Jesus said in the chapter before where he says, you're going to have the light just a little while longer. This is in John 12. Walk while you have the light before darkness overtakes you. Whoever walks in the dark does not know where they're going. Believe in the light while you have the light so that you may become children of light. But Judas, it says that he walks out into the dark. The confrontation between light and darkness that John set up in the very first chapter of his gospel is now reaching its climax. The forces of darkness are making their move. Will light prevail, or will the darkness overcome the light? And so Jesus, after Judas leaves, it says this, as when he was gone, Jesus says, now the Son of Man is glorified, and God is glorified in him. If God is glorified in him, God will glorify the Son in himself and will glorify him at once. It's amazing that once Judas leaves, Jesus is like, all right, glory time, which basically means suffering time, which basically means I'm about to die. And in my death, that's where God is glorified the most. Then he says, my children, I will be with you only a little longer. You will look for me, and just as I told the Jews, so I tell you now, where I'm going, you cannot come. So it's kind of this moment when the door closes on Judas and something kind of shifts in the room where you can tell something kind of happens where Jesus kind of brings his group close and says something that he calls them something that he hasn't really called them before up until this moment. My children, the children of light that we just talked about, come close. I don't have very much time. And that's why these next few chapters in the book of John are some of the most intimate, some of the most read, some of those powerful chapters in the whole Bible, because it's this moment where Jesus is saying, darkness is about to come get me. And where I'm going, you can't come. But while I'm gone, here are your marching orders. Here are some of the most important things for you to remember. It's going to get dark for you too. But remember this. A new command I give you. Love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. Notice how Jesus doesn't say, here's some good advice. He's saying, I have a command for you. Jesus, again, doesn't use that phrasing very much in his ministry of, I'm throwing out commands. But right here, he does. He uses that card, says, I now command you. And this isn't just a cute, like, love one another, you know, passage that sometimes we can see quoted in different places. Look at when he says it. One of his closest friends just went out to betray him. In the next breath, he's about to predict his other best friend, Peter, and his denial of him. He's about to be beaten, tortured, and killed. And he looks at them and says, love each other the way I'm about to love you. In the face of that darkness, even when you disagree, even when you've been hurt, even when you sit on the opposite sides of an issue, love each other anyway. That's how the whole world will know that you walk with me. Radical love is the defining mark of Christianity. Radical love is the defining mark of what it means to be a Christian. And if you're not a Christian, or you're just trying to figure out Jesus these days, this is what we are supposed to look like. A towel in our hands, knees on the ground, a church that is looking to love others. And I think the church throughout history and even the modern day has done such a poor job often and has failed to look like that servant that we see in Jesus. And if your experience has been more about, you know, judgment or power, you know, when it comes to Jesus, than like a radical sacrificial love, that's not who Jesus is. That's not who we're supposed to be. We're supposed to be the ones that kind of walk with a towel. You know, this command is so simple because it's one that my four-year-old could memorize, and it makes sense to her. But it's also profound enough that the most mature of us feel embarrassed at how poorly we understand it and live it out sometimes. And I know I've been really challenged by it as I've been going through it this week. Because if people were to have like a video camera on my life, on the day-to-day, would it be so clear that that's the defining mark of my life? Radical love. Would they see that in my day-to-day interactions with people? Is that the defining characteristic of your life? Would people describe you as a loving person, as someone who is defined by love? I think there are two things where we live that can sometimes get in the way of that radical love. There's a lot of different reasons. I think where we live, there's two main ways. One is our busyness. I hear consistently from people that move to the area that people are too busy for them. That we live in a really busy place. Hurry and busyness rip 1 Corinthians 13 out of the Bible. You cannot really be loving if you're in a hurry or if you're busy. And I think some of us are too busy or running around too much to love in the way that Jesus commands us to love. One is our busyness. The second to me is our consumeristic culture and our consumeristic nature. To me, often we have a mindset of, what is the church doing for me? What are others doing for me? Why can't they do at North River what these other churches down the street do? And while I think a lot of that growth and improvement is really important and it matters for us to continually grow, I think Jesus keeps pulling us back to a simpler question of, is the towel in your hand though? Are you someone who's approaching life, is approaching this community and saying, well, how can I wash some feet? How can I serve? How can I love one another as myself? Not just how do I get and how do I get my own feet washed, but how can I go out and really kind of wash other people's feet? Because Jesus says, if you do that, you will be blessed if you imitate him. But I think our consumeristic culture, to me, just steals from us that blessing that Jesus wants to give us if we just approach the world with, how can I wash people's feet? But and when people do that in the midst of the darkness, I think that there's so much light that comes in our busyness and in our consumerism with people just having ordinary acts of love. One person I just wanted to shout out is one of our seventh graders, okay? And so I got a text from one of our seventh graders that was a message, and here's the message on the East Cobb Moms Facebook group, okay? And East Cobb Moms, maybe, I don't know if that, you know, that could, that's can be a scary place to go on sometimes, you know? But it says, shout out to an amazing kid. Hope his mom is on here. If you have a son named Maddox, this is Maddox Nelson, who is in middle school. If you think this is your, this might be your child, comment and happy to connect. Your son is amazing and you are doing all the things right. My son came home Monday a bit sad because his crush rejected his Valentine. But today, your son brought him a little capybara and a list of things to help get over rejection, like talking to your parents or binge watching your favorite show. So sweet. Not many young men like this, and what a sweet friend he is. Way to go, Mom. I see so many posts on bad behavior here. Thought we could use a pick-me-up. Thank you, Maddox, and thank you, Maddox's mom. That's one of our seventh graders. I think he's up the hill, but Rosa, you know, is doing children's ministry stuff right now. So if you see Rosa, give her a hug. Say, you're a great mom, you know, Rosa. You know, Maddox came up even after the last couple of weeks with Nick. Maddox has come up to me, you know, and Bree several times and given us just big hugs. And I think I just want to be more like that. I want to be more like Maddox. In the world where there's bad behavior, stories going on all over the place, and darkness, and it's so easy to complain and get busy and talk about all the things that are going wrong, he brings his little capybara, you know, into the equation and says, hey, why don't you go binge some of your favorite TV shows? And that right there, just choosing to wash someone else's feet, is what brings this extraordinary light. And it stands out so much. They will know you're my disciples by the way that you love. Now, as we close out here in chapter 13, some people have viewed this moment with John as John's kind of like Great Commission moment. You know, Matthew has the Great Commission, right? Therefore, go make disciples of all nations, baptizing them, in the name of the Father, Son, teaching them to obey everything, right? This is John's moment. All authority and power has been given to Jesus. Therefore, imitate me by washing each other's feet. Obey the command I'm giving you to love one another. And everyone will know you're my disciples because of how you love one another. And then the next few chapters talk about how Jesus is going to be with us through his Spirit to the very end. But there's a couple of takeaways I have just as we kind of close out this time. You know, to me, Jesus kind of gives us the practicals in here. Number one is just to find some time to receive Jesus's love this week. Sit still for a little bit. That might sound simple, but for a lot of us, it's actually going to be hard. Sit still. Whatever comes up, anxiety, shame, guilt, let it come up and let Jesus wash it. Give it to him. Approach his throne of grace with confidence. Let him serve you. And second, think of someone else that you can lovingly serve this week. Ask yourself honestly, man, would people describe me as a loving person? And if not, that's okay. Just maybe talk to somebody about it. How can we be more loving together? How can you break out your towel, you know, this week to your family, to your coworkers, to the church community? Who can you love like Jesus? To me, we should walk through our lives with a towel in our hand. That's how we should walk through life, is with a towel in our hand. And here's, you know, here's what we've seen today. The darkness for Jesus in chapter 13 is closing in. These are the final moments he has with his disciples. Jesus doesn't respond with power or force, but he picks up his towel. He picks up his towel and he says, this is how you defeat the darkness. Get on your knees, wash some feet, love each other the way that I have loved you. Love will always defeat darkness. The world is dark right now. There's a lot to be afraid of. But I think this is one of the church's, honestly, greatest opportunities. When things get dark, we don't reach for power, we reach for our towels. We serve, we love our enemies, we love each other. We know how the story ends, so we don't have to be afraid. We can live open-handed and open-hearted, free to love, because we know that one day Jesus is gonna redeem all things. As we move into communion, I think it's worth noting that John doesn't have like a traditional communion scene like some of his other gospel writers do. But some have suggested that the foot washing moment is his communion moment. Maybe Jesus is saying, do this in remembrance of me. Not just the bread and the cup, but the towel and the basin too. A community formed by humble, relentless love for one another. As you take communion today, let that image sit with you of Jesus, the Lord of the universe, on his knees, washing your feet. And then go wash someone else's later today. Let's pray and thank God for washing our feet. Jesus, we humbly just come before you with our dirty feet, and thank you for washing them. God, we don't reject it, we want to receive it. We want to receive your love. We also want that, God, to be an example for us and should motivate us to go love one another. Please help us to imitate you, God. We don't want to just clap for you. We want to imitate you. We want to be like you. Please give us your Spirit to help us to do that. Thank you for washing our feet. God, please help us to obey the command that you have to love one another as you have loved us. Thank you for laying down your life for us. Love you so much. Thanks for this time, this bread, this juice that represents your body and your blood that you gave for us, that now wash us clean. We love you. Amen.